What is up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I am Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Trance. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. What a weekend around the Vancouver Canucks. Trancer,
something happened?
How you doing, man?
Yeah, what?
A few things went down.
To use the old Halford and Brough. So the Canucks, since we last spoke in an emergency pod, by the way.
Yes.
To our listeners on Friday evening. And the last time we were on these airwaves, the Canucks have lost two games and lost two trades. No, I'm kidding. And executed. Bow, 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 bow. Yeah. Can I get some talk show? No. And made two earth-shaking, tectonic trades that reimagine the direction for this franchise and see them jettison one of the most productive cult hero players in franchise history. JT Miller goes to the New York Rangers. The Canucks get Vittorio Mancini, Dan Riccio's new favorite player, I presume. And, of course, Philip Hietl. Hey, Dom, we need your Philip. How should we be saying Philip Hietl?
Hietl.
Philip Hietl.
It means catch in Slovak and Czech.
All right.
And Lodge refuses to comply to this, by the way.
And the Canucks caught Philip Hietl. We're going to side with Batch. I did want to tell our audience how it actually was pronounced.
And then I appreciate that. Thank you.
And then we'll go with Hietl, which is what Batch will go with, because you know how sensitive Batch gets when we even put like the sh on she loves. Right? He's very like Dr. Evil about it. He's like, shh, shh. Anyway. I've really butchered this recap. Vittorio Mancini, Philip Hietl, and the New York Rangers 2025.
Yep.
First,
protected.
Top 13 protected, can convey to 2026 unprotected. You know how much I love those draft picks. So tough for me to see the Canucks turn around and use it to jettison a couple of UFA misfires in Danton Heinen and Vinny Deharnay in exchange. Also Melvin Fernstrom. Can't forget the Fernstrom inclusion, because that's a pretty decent upside piece that they just parted with as well. Anyway, in return, they get Drew O'Connor and Marcus Pettersson from the Pittsburgh Penguins, a pair of expiring players, but a pair of good players. And one thing that's interesting to me, you watch that Dallas game, and didn't you feel like the Canucks' weak links were just showing all over the ice in that game?
Absolutely.
Like, it was just one of those games where the theory of a Rutherford Tockett team where, you know, we have like depth scoring punch on the third and fourth lines, and it just wasn't there. There just wasn't enough players making plays that contribute to winning, play-driving plays that help you win. Canucks went out and addressed that almost immediately after the game ended.
All right, let's go officially to the whiteboard here.
Oh, wow, we weren't even in the whiteboard. I'm, like, nervous about the whiteboard. We've got so much to get into.
Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, February 3rd. We'll start with the headlines. You ran through the particulars, but the way I would sum it up is the Canucks dramatically reshape their team mid-season on Friday night, executing a pair of trades. As you mentioned, we did the emergency JT Miller reaction pod. We threaded the needle before they turned around and flipped that pick to the Penguins, along with Deharnay and Heinen, for Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor. But you take the two moves in total, and obviously the subtraction of JT Miller was always going to have a massive impact on how this team looks, how it's played, who's bearing which responsibilities, all of that, the identity of the team. And then you add in the additions, right? Not just Hietl, but then Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor. And there's a lot of questions to get into here, right? Obviously the Elias Pettersson side of things, what they try to do next in terms of additions. But in the here and now, it's going to be fascinating to see just how different this team looks, how different this team plays, how this team's identity is affected, is different. And just going off the one game sample size, because you mentioned the Dallas one, but I mean, that's before the new guys are in, obviously, but Miller's out of the lineup. It's just kind of a weird game. I think that'll probably be one of the least remembered regular season Canucks games in a long time because people were so distracted by the JT Miller trade at the time. You look at last night, and I think there's some pretty interesting signs about just how much they have reshaped this team.
Yeah.
And that was without Quinn Hughes in the lineup. But so you had Filip Hedl, you had Drew O'Connor, you had Marcus Pettersson all playing in that game. And it looked pretty significantly different for the Canucks.
It did. And I don't know that it looked different in a bad way, you know, which is sort of interesting. It was a tough night, though. And obviously it's a tough look that it was a tough night for the Elias Pettersson line with Brock Besser and Jake DeBrusk. I mean, they generated very, very little offensively. And then, of course, the image we'll all leave with is Pettersson missing the net.
Yep.
With a glorious chance 3-on-3. And it's too bad because him and Besser could not have played that shift better defensively, right? Just like wait. They were in position. They didn't give up a great chance. They pounced on the loose puck. They skated up together. They make the right pass. And Pettersson just misses. Tough, right? Tough, because that would have really changed the narrative around Vancouver's now top forward. And he's a player who clearly needs to flip the narrative around his game. But Suter, O'Connor, Sherwood, can I interest you in some?
Yeah, absolutely.
Suter, O'Connor, Sherwood?
Hedl, Garland, Joshua?
I'm a little less into that.
I don't know. I liked it.
I liked Hedl.
Yeah. I thought the Garland had some moments there, too.
I know.
Joshua, not as much.
They need to find a way to play Joshua down lineup until he finds his footing right now.
Yeah.
I don't feel like they're doing him any favors because he's just clearly not up to his standard. And why would he be? We all understand that. He was just getting there before he missed an additional month with a hip injury. I would just like to see him get back into the mix in like an energy line role on the fourth line. Now, that probably requires you busting up this O'Connor Sherwood,
yes.
Right? Playing like O'Connor with
Hedl and Garland.
Like that I'm interested in. But anyway, whatever. So I'm interested in one of the Canucks' top three lines. But I thought the speed that Hedl and O'Connor can bring to this lineup was evident. You know, JT Miller obviously went to New York and had two phenomenal games this weekend. But let's be honest, the version of JT Miller that New York, we'll talk to Johnny Lazarus in the second segment or the third segment. And Laz is going to tell us all about, you know, his over the moon reaction to the Rangers acquiring Miller, who had two great games. We weren't seeing that version of JT Miller, right? And so it's not that Hedl is better than JT Miller. He's not. In fact, quite the opposite. And you're seeing that as Miller takes his role and does a totally different thing with it in New York. But just having a team that worked really hard, even if they were slightly more limited, if they can, you know, maintain that consistently, like, I'll take that because those, you know, dog-eared efforts we were getting from this team over much of the season, I mean, that was beginning to offend me as a viewer. Like, that was just as someone who likes hockey and wants to watch good hockey, that was beginning to offend me. So anyway, O'Connor, Hedl, I thought they looked really good. Marcus Pettersson, I thought looked really good. I mean, you can see the length, right? He's got, like, enough of that length and size and classic defensive game that is sort of a prerequisite to earn Rick Tocchet's trust and Adam Foote's trust. But he also clearly, like, what a breath of fresh air to have a guy who can move the puck like that beyond Hronek and Hughes in the Canucks lineup. I thought that impact was felt immediately, as it was, by the way, for Elias Pettersson, the defenseman, right? I mean, what a great game for him last night.
Yep.
So some of the takeaways, I thought new guys all made a good impression. It was a solid performance from the Canucks. They just can't win 3-on-3. I don't know what's going on, but it's probably luck because 3-10 is wild stuff from this group.
It was the combination, right? The kind of stacking effect of the speed of O'Connor, the speed and the puck handling ability of Hedl, the puck moving ability of Marcus Pettersson that's been so absent. And it had a bit of a domino effect where all of a sudden I did think it really changed how the team was able to play. And I think there's an effort element to that too, where they just had more jump in their step. But you can have jump in your step, but if you're not able to move the puck, if you're not able to skate that fast, you're not going to look like a particularly fast team still. They looked like a faster team than they have in a long, long time. And, you know, at the very least, it made me very curious to see what they look like once Quinn Hughes is back in the lineup, especially because how often have we talked about the non-Hughes minutes this year and what a disaster it's been for the Canucks Well, that was 60 minutes of non-Hughes minutes, and it looked pretty good. Now, it's a tired Red Wings team. They're not world beaters. Like, those caveats are important, too. There's adrenaline going for O'Connor and for Hedl. But if Pettersson in particular allows you to stabilize and bring that puck-moving ability to the non-Hughes minutes, that's a really big deal for this team potentially going forward. We can talk a lot. We'll talk a lot about just kind of what the new additions bring, how they fit in, you know, Pettersson's contract status, all of that. Doubling back to the Miller deal, and as we did the emergency podcast on Friday. Patrick Alvin spoke to the media on Saturday about the deal and some of the other things going on with his team. I was on the air with Josh on Saturday to kind of react to that a little bit, but thinking back and kind of mulling it over, you know, really, and your point about there's going to be the temptation for Canucks fans now every time JT Miller scores an awesome goal or sets up a great play for the New York Rangers to kind of throw their hands up and say, ah, man, look what we gave up. But you listen to Patrick Alvin and hearing him describe it as basically a collaborative process with Miller and his agent that started like 2 months ago. And the recognition internally from all sides, including from JT Miller, that it was time to move on. It's time to find a different team. It's time to find a better situation for JT Miller as a player, as a person. There was obviously a lot going on behind the scenes here. I know Elliot Friedman mentioned on 32 Thoughts, you know, he got wind of when the team was in Florida earlier, small group of players kind of having this meeting, trying to see if there was any way Miller and Pettersson could patch things over, could find a way to work together. Obviously, it didn't work. The more we start to hear, and again, from Alvin describing that process, the more obvious it becomes, if it wasn't already obvious, that Miller's time was at an end and we just weren't going to get the peak version, the apex version of JT Miller on anything like a consistent basis in Vancouver if he stayed here.
It was clearly over. And I think in the wake of it, you're seeing the JT Miller in New York this weekend that we saw throughout last season, right? And you got to be happy for the guy. Honestly, like, he looks like he can exhale. You know, we still don't know exactly what's happened. Elliot's report is fascinating. We know something happened after that Nashville game. And then we know that it didn't get better because, you know, as like that timeline that I've been reporting on with Dhaliwal, right? Like, it's kind of early December that the Canucks make the decision that this isn't going to work. That's after Miller comes back.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then honestly, the way that the Canucks played last night kind of felt like they could exhale too. Like, and this isn't to blame Miller for it or to blame Pettersson for it or to sort of cast aspersions on anyone or exactly what happened. I just think this went on too long. And when you consider too the noise around it for the last 6 to 8 weeks, really, since Miller took his leave in late November, I was exhausted talking about it. Can you imagine living through it? It just felt like everyone could exhale. And so that's where this team had gotten to, where it wasn't tenable to move forward with this core. And I actually think what we've seen from all sides since have really sort of put a stamp that makes that readily apparent to any neutral observer. Like, this needed to end, and it just sucks. Because JT Miller is a really, really good player.
Yeah, and a really good player, obviously, who had a really remarkable emotional connection with the fans as well. So I get that. And when I say, like, oh, don't be following, you know, every game and reacting that way when he scores a great goal for the Rangers or whatever. Look, I understand fans being very disappointed that JT Miller is not a Vancouver Canuck. I think it's just important to keep it in perspective that everyone is telling, and all the signs that are telling us that they weren't going to get that here. It was over. It was time to move on. Even Rick Tocchet after the game, you know, talking about how he hopes it can be a fresh start for a lot of players. That, hey, new guys come in, bring some extra life to the team, and you've still got a bunch of games left on the schedule. Use this opportunity as a clean slate to kind of jumpstart the rest of your season, and that certainly will be the hope for the Canucks here as you know, they lose that one in overtime last night, but they're still trying to make the playoffs despite being out of playoff position right now. Let's do a quick update here in the broadsheet. Now, so first and foremost, I think, is the reporting from Elliot Friedman that the Elias Pettersson side of things is kind of on the back burner, at least for now. That they're not still, you know, We heard that they almost traded him to Carolina before the Hurricanes eventually opt to acquire Mikko Rantanen instead. They ultimately do move JT Miller. We'd always heard that it was possible they could trade both of them, but it sounds like now the focus is on, we're not going to do the Pettersson thing right now. Let's see how he responds to this. It's time for him to step up and really deliver. Maybe we revisit it in the offseason, but for right now, the Elias Pettersson trade discussions are probably getting dialed back.
Yeah, so, I mean, I reported this on Saturday. He's off the block.
Yeah.
Now, the NMC, the size of the deal, right? The complexity of this situation and how the Canucks are going to assess risk here. I'm not saying he's never getting moved or that the club goes into next league year once where his NMC will kick in without kicking the tires on this again. But certainly what I was hearing in the wake of these deals on Friday is that the Canucks have pulled him off the block and are going to, you know, give him a chance to settle in and look at what they have. This team can't afford to lose another top six centerman right now. I mean, even getting Hedl back, you know, the fact is that trying to find a top line or second line center is now Vancouver's top priority and not one of those top priorities where they're going to necessarily be able to get it done before the deadline, but something they'll look at doing right away, something they'll, you know, consider doing this week, something they'll consider doing before the deadline, and something they'll still be focused on trying to accomplish at the draft and beyond if they can't find the answer that they're looking for. Like, this is everything. So in that context, I think Pettersson's going to get along, settle it down around him, right? You're not getting moved. You're off the block. Let's see what we have here. We'll get into this conversation more, but I just think the physical limitations that are so evident right now, like, there's just no juice in his game. I think he's working hard. I just don't think it's there right now for him, and I don't know if it's going to be there until next season. Like, it looks to me like one of those players who's going to need an offseason to get back. Are you willing to take that risk?
Yeah.
You know, given the enormity of your commitment to him, I think that's going to be a fascinating one. We don't have to get too deep into it here. We can shelve it for another segment.
I just think ultimately, as much as we're all going to be focused on the production for Elias Pettersson, and that's really important, I wonder how much of management's decision making is going to be based on what they see behind the scenes. Because if you do think there's the physical limitations, now management hasn't necessarily bought into that. They've never really accepted the tendonitis thing as an excuse. And even if I think they probably look at it as, okay, if there are physical limitations, it's because Pettersson didn't come into camp in the right shape. How much does hard work behind the scenes and the right practice habits and all of that, how much does that move the needle towards keeping him, even if the production isn't there? I can't answer that. And it's a really, really difficult decision and a really big risk that they're going to have to take if, in fact, his production doesn't bounce back for the remainder of the season. Yeah, and we should mention as well, Sat saying, you know, look, much what along the lines you're saying, act three here is still to come. They are going to be searching hard for an impact forward.
Yeah, and I wouldn't necessarily suggest that what me and Sat are reporting is the same thing. So
okay.
Sat reported the impact forward thing, and I think that's true. What I was just talking about with Joshua, you know, it would be nice if they could let him find his legs in an energy line role. Now, Hoglander is a possible answer for your top nine issues. Maybe Lekkerimäki. I know he was injured a week ago. It doesn't seem to be too serious. So maybe on the other side of the Four Nations break, maybe he's a potential answer.
Yep.
I think the club takes a look at both, but I think they could still acquire just a top nine guy, a top nine impact guy, especially if it's a long-term fit. I think they'd be in that market. Obviously, they'd love to get a center because then Pugh Suter becomes that guy. But I wouldn't, like, I don't preclude them going out and getting a winger. So I think what Sat's talking about as a short-term desire and what I'm talking about, where it's like, remember that offseason, I guess it was the offseason they signed Mikheyev, where I was banging the table being like, this team's obsessed with upgrading their defense. And then they did nothing to upgrade their defense. But we knew from Hronek, Zadorov, like everything they've done since, the Volander pick, right? Everything they've done since shows you how big a preoccupation it was. They were just sort of waiting, biding their time, looking for the answers that they felt were the right answers. I think that's more where they're at with centers. So that's how I'd sort of...
So there could be like cheaper forward help pre-deadline is what you're saying, while the search for a high-end guy continues.
Correct. Yeah. And especially because the Besser question.
Yes.
And you know, a smaller one, the Suter question, right, remains ones that the club will answer based on how their performance tracks between now and the deadline.
Lineup notes, it's a day off.
We got to get into, club does intend to reach out to the camps of both Marcus Pettersson and Drew O'Connor shortly. These are expiring players, but they were not acquired as rentals, and the Canucks intend to keep them as long-term lineup fixtures.
We can talk more about what that might look like in the next segment. Lineup notes, day off for the team today. Hughes, I know his agent was on Donnie and Dolly and saying he doesn't expect him to withdraw from the Four Nations, which gets going soon here. That would seem to be pretty good news about his injury status. I wonder if we'll see him. He was a game time decision.
Dude wanted to play last night.
Yeah, so I would expect we'll see him against Colorado. The team assigned Mancini, Elias Pettersson, DPD, and Linus Karlsson to Abbotsford today. Now, no waivers required for any of those players, so likely just about cap space accrual.
But they're still accruing, right? Like, that's still a focus and a priority, which shows you not to, like, don't fold up your lawn chairs. The fireworks show isn't necessarily over just yet, right? That's what that move tells us, even if it's just it's not a paper transaction, but even if it's just sort of a day off, let's toll a little bit of extra space move.
And I think bigger picture, it's going to be really fascinating to see how they manage their blue line here in the short term. Now, Hughes coming back obviously takes a spot out of rotation, but really interesting to me that Soucy was out of the lineup, both Elias Pettersson and Noah Juulsen in ahead of him. Obviously, Juulsen a right shot guy, but still, that was interesting, and I think they're going to want to get Mancini a look here at some point too.
They do for sure. They're really excited to have acquired Mancini, but I mean, look, let's table this, because part of the context here too is, how do you take Elias Pettersson out of the lineup after what he did last night? I mean, that was perhaps the biggest story, or should be the biggest story, coming out of what we saw against Detroit, where they finally trusted him to play a regular third pairing shift, and he absolutely ate the Patrick Kane line's lunch. Like, he just ate he drank their milkshake all night long. Let's go. Like, let's go. I have no appetite to see that experiment end. I'm not saying that he's going to be able to sustain that level of play. We all know that sustainability is the question for young players, but we need to see more of it after how good that looked.
Does his milkshake bring all the boys to the yard?
No, because it's been drunk by Elias Pettersson. Do you not get the I drink your milkshake reference?
I was just messing with
you. But have you seen There Will Be Blood?
Yes.
Okay, good.
I think he's also part of a bigger discussion about what this blue line is going to look like next year. And all of a sudden, with the addition of Marcus Pettersson here, and then, like, I don't know, there's some interesting things happening on the Canucks blue line with his emergence as well.
Especially if you get Marcus Pettersson done, and especially once you bring Volander out, if he looks, you know, half as good as scouts seem to think, and, you know, as good plus 30%. I expect him to look at the NHL level. Anyway.
Playoff standings update. Canucks with a 72% chance to make the playoffs per Dom's model. Now it's factoring in the personnel changes.
And it's up from where it was a week ago.
Yes.
So they're up from where they were a week ago, obviously winning the Blues game and picking up a point against... But they only went 500.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty interesting that actually Vancouver's odds haven't flipped that much. Here's
Calgary won last night, and St. Louis beat Utah in regulation, so just a 2-point game there.
And Calgary was probably pretty unlucky to not do what Vancouver did and at least sneak out a point with a third period comeback against Detroit Red Wings. One thing to note, though, about the projections here, the Canucks' Stanley Cup odds went from 2% to 1% in the wake. So that's where you see the change in personnel. I do think it's interesting to note, by the way, Jamie, the New York Rangers, 39%. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They were at 42% a week ago. So basically the trade, while it does make the Rangers better, Dom's model is kind of shrugging at it both ways.
Well, and it's also a reflection that the results on the out-of-town scoreboard are just as big a factor as personnel changes at this time of year. Well, you know what I mean? When you start, like, there's less runway.
Teams.
Exactly, right? You're in the mix. So it's, you can bolster your team, but then if the teams you're chasing are winning games as well, it's not going to move your odds all that much. Do you want to hit on anything in the betting update?
Yeah, I do. I want to hit on two things. One, where you can find the Canucks take a big hit on the betting markets as a result of this trade? Where do you think?
Stanley Cup odds?
Stanley Cup odds from plus 3,000 on Friday when we were doing this show to plus 5,000 today in the wake of the Miller trade. So the gambling markets reacting in a major way to the loss of upside, right, that's represented by the Canucks subtracting JT Miller from the lineup. The Canucks implied probability of making the playoffs, the markets put it at 60%, which is what, 10, 12% lower than where Dom's got it, minus 140 to make the playoffs. The Calgary Flames are up to plus 155 to make the playoffs. So the market increasingly congealing around this notion of Vancouver or Calgary for the eighth seed. Not really factoring in like Utah's at plus 500. The St. Louis Blues never deserved to be taken seriously and are at plus 850. Yeah,
both of those teams are under NHL 500 now.
And the LA Kings, despite that like moment where people got excited because they had a rough 10-game stretch and then they impressively beat Carolina over the weekend, minus 3,000. The money does not share your enthusiasm for the Kings falling out. They control play too well. Their games in hand are too powerful. Give up that dream.
That's the whiteboard for today. We'll take a break. Lots more to get into on the other side. Some of the lingering questions from the game last night. DPD's future with the team. What a Marcus Pettersson extension might look like. Brock Besser's future. So much to get into. You can send your text in 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. We will be back with more Canucks Talk next on Sportsnet 650.